So good morning. I'm Mike Duff. I'm a contributing editor to the IHA news site, homepagenews.com. This morning we have for you the merchandising and messaging in omnichannel world, Leanne Schwarzkopf, founder and principal of Project Partners Network, is going to talk to you. Project Partners works with companies on licensing programs and marketing to create solutions and encourage growth, and works with everyone from startups to Fortune 500 companies. So please welcome Leanne.
Thank you, Mike. excited to be here at the first conference, you know, for many of us since the pandemic. And when I was asked to speak today, I was trying to figure out what would be a great hook. And all I could think of was, over the holidays, I was trying to buy a bed for my son. He got married. He's bringing his wife home. He's got a single bed loft. It's not quite conducive to having the family over. I tried over and over and over for weeks to try and find a bed. And I'm savvy enough to know that the supply chain is an issue, but this wasn't about this. This was about the customer experience and how people are treated during their customer journey. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. And I think in an overwhelming term that came to me as my team and I were putting this together was a term that's been around since the late 80s. It's VUCA. It's about volatility, uncertainty, you know, complexity, ambiguity, and certainly that's what we're living in now. You couple that with the fact that consumers are changing, they're evolving, their emotions are included in everything they do. And you really need to make sure that you connect with them on all different kinds of levels. So today we'll talk about consumers, this little bit about the shopping landscape, some market intelligence. We'll talk about some trends, tips, techniques. It's meant to be a big picture overview. I'm not going to go very deep into any one thing, but really I want to make sure you know there's a lot of resources out there that are available to scrappy companies as well as, you know, the big Fortune 50 and Fortune 500 companies. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on project partners, but really just want you to know we have a broad frame of reference. We've worked in almost every category from CPG, toys, games, housewares, home and gift, and we've worked for a nice assortment of companies. So our philosophy is really you have to balance what you want to do internally with what are the market conditions and what are consumer insights? Because if you understand all those things, you can reach your highest potential and you can see the big picture. I heard about this book about a week ago. I just started it, love it. Anybody that wants to read it, I want you to call me and tell me what you think, but I'm a few chapters in, and I love it. It's about the me-tail economy and how consumers are really in control now. It's about how you provide them with convenience and category expertise, customization, curation, community, and those are what's really going to make the difference. It's no longer about what manufacturers and retailers say. It's about the consumer. Another foundational thing to keep in mind as we're talking through the presentation today is emotions as the currency of the future. I think it was Ambiente a couple years ago, I heard Katrine Googly talk about people think, you know, when people make their purchases, about 80% of that is emotional. So you make the emotional choice, then you try and validate it with the data, whereas only 20% is the other way around. So I thought that's a really interesting way to approach the consumer journey. And that takes you then to the next idea where you need to think about consumers as people, not consumers. So put yourself in their mind space. What are they worried about? What are they thinking about? So today, as we talk about our research and we talk about the things that are available to you, yes, you should be thinking about the internal all the time, but mostly we're going to talk about external. What's happening in the world? How did it affect what consumers are looking for? What's happening with the competitors? What's happening in your marketing, in your marketplace? The foundation of all this is a little bit of brain science. Your brain absorbs so much. also at Ambiente Academy, I saw this great illustration of your brain perceives this, but you know this, and you're really interested in this, but you remember only that smallest piece. So the more consumer touch points you can meet, the better a chance you have of having them remember you. The world is full of data, but the magic number is 11. The brain can process 11 million bits of information per second, but your conscious mind can only handle about 40 to 50. Don't know what happened to that slide, I apologize. That's the equivalent, if you like a visual, of walking from Los Angeles to Cleveland versus walking from the front of the house to the back of the house. So wrap your mind about that and all the things your mind is collecting. Add to that, you have less than 12 seconds to make that impression, so it's really critical that you know your consumer and you know your competitor in order to make a difference as you grow your business. So as you're researching your consumer and your competitor, you should be thinking about everything from generations as a frame of reference to demographics, psychographics, life stages. It's not just about how old they are, it's about what concerns them, what are the things that are at the top of their mind. And think about your competitors very broadly. It's not just, I sell this widget, they sell the same widget. It's, I sell this widget. These are complementary products. So you need to be thinking about that. What are they doing to engage with consumers? What can you learn from them? What do you admire? What are they doing wrong? And then you can use that data to think about how to approach your retailer. You know, what problem can you solve? You can think about how you fit into the marketplace, and you can think about how does your brand and product really make a difference. So to do this, you need to read everything you can. And it sounds kind of obvious, but many of us don't. We read very specific journals, we're into our specific category. This is a thing we're interested in. But if you're looking at housewares, you should be thinking about toys. You should be thinking about games. You should be thinking about food. So read everything and look not just at the present, look at forward. What can inform you? And then think about how you can be a leader as well as how you can be a follower. As you're collecting all this information, you want to start identifying patterns. You want to look at consumer, you want to look at trade, you want to look at digital. And then once you see those patterns, you can identify what your path forward is. You can build your SWOT analysis. What are your strengths, your weaknesses? What are the opportunities and threats in the marketplace? And then you can create a business plan that provides balance. And the balance I'm looking for is something that gives you a strategy, but also lets you take advantage of opportunity. So you're not killed by something that doesn't work if you take a shot, but you also can take advantage of all of the plus sides. When you start looking around the marketplace, you'll notice things like how consumers are being responsive to brands. This is from YouGov. I'll give you a couple of sources as we dabble through this, but YouGov is a great source of consumer data, brand data. And then you have to think about it as a process. So don't ever do, I did it on Tuesday and I don't have to do it again until a year from Tuesday. It's a continual process. Because dealing with the consumer journey is very tactical. You have to be there where they are, whether it's email or word of mouth, direct mail, in-store, what your app is. But while you're thinking about the tactical, don't forget it's also emotional. How are you making them feel? Remember, we talked about 80% of the customer decisions are made based on emotions. It's a critical piece. Love this chart. One of my colleagues created this. She does this every morning. What's happening on my marketplace? Where's my brand mentioned? What are people talking about it? What's happening in my industry? What's happening with my competitors? And what's happening in the world news? So again, you can start to paint those pictures. Talked about where to get that information. You've got an incredible resource. We probably check 100 to 200 resources on a daily, weekly basis. But these are a couple that you can subscribe to, you can pay big money to, but they also provide tools that are available to people just on their websites. Here's new research we've got, here's a summary. So I encourage you to be looking at those. Same thing with the census and the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You can pull data from there that tells you what's happening with demographics, what's happening with buying habits, all kinds of things. And of course, you need to be looking at you need to be looking at resources like the Wall Street Journal, the CNN, different things that the consumers are reading and that are reporting on what consumers are doing. So, you know, grocery inflation is a big deal. Food prices are rising. That affects this industry because people want to cook at home, but they also want to make sure that they're spending their money wisely. One of the examples I used about looking outside of your industry, so even if you're in the housewares industry, look at women's wear. It'll tell you people are interested in carbon neutrality. People are interested in human rights. They're interested in diversity and inclusion. You'll find out what retailers are doing, and you'll find out what consumers need. You might deal mostly with home and housewares companies. Well, look what's happening at CVS. They're taking, you know, they partnered with Michael Graves to put a little more fashion into items that are used to help people that might have temporary or permanent challenges in their life. You can also look, and this is from Morning Consult, when you make a decision, what's happening in the world, like M&M's and Disney did, where they changed up their characters, what do people think? You know, how are the different generations approaching change? So there's all kinds of data you can get related to your industry in other areas. Backyarding is another thing that you can read about and hear people engaging in, you know, all different kinds of activities and entertaining, and we see that rising as more and more people are getting, as we're heading into the summer months, certainly, but as people are trying to get back to, with groups and things like that. And then another area that I find fascinating is the whole idea of drinking and not. And what you can do here is think about, okay, here's all the accessories, here's all the products needed for my bar cart or whatever, but how does that apply to non-alcoholic drinks, which are growing, you know, that whole area is growing tremendously. It's not just dry January. There's whole groups of people that say, I don't want to have alcohol, but I want to have fun. I want to socialize. You still need fun glasses. You still need fun activities. There's an organization called Data Central, which tracks food trends, primarily in restaurants. But my takeaway with them is if people are craving it in restaurants, don't they want to learn how to make it at home? So you can look at flavors and dishes. You can look at food trends from, you know, different parts of the country. And then you can translate that into products. So if you know that, you know, schlosslik or kebabs are going to be a big deal, what are the accessories needed for that? Another area we've been following is the whole idea of nostalgia and comfort. And the article on the right-hand side was in the New York Times, I think, last week, talking about people are looking for comfort in everything they do. And you've seen, you know, a variety of Friends merchandise out there. You see icons from different ages. And I love that example on the left-hand side was a cosmetic store in those, you know, I don't know if I would call them gorgeous, but the purely 70s colors and really resonates that need to go back to nostalgia. One of the things I don't want you to forget about is that primary research is no longer 18 months of work, $100,000. You can do some great primary research, and we worked with Springboard Future to present some, to pull together some research on what's happening in the housewares industry that we'll share with you tomorrow morning. I want to pause here and give a little case study on people that do this consumer listening very well. The direct-to-consumer brands have been paying attention to what are the trends in the marketplace, what are consumers interested in, whether it's sustainability, different methodologies for doing, for cooking or whatever. And they really, I love this example here of Great Jones, they really hone in on that emotional piece that I was talking about that kind of winds all the way through. Make the kitchen your happy place. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. And then the power and pleasure of cooking at home. So you've got this warm, fuzzy thing going on, and you've got the perfect tool, which they then, of course, tell you, show you, and it comes in all these colors. So it's like, well, what color is best for me? They have a little a way to engage with their consumer. It's like, what color matches your personality? What do you like? What shoes do you like to wear? Who's your favorite celebrity chef? What is your favorite dish? And where do you want to go when you're done cooking? And then when you're done taking this little quiz, which takes you, you know, 20 seconds, Now you share your email address, and they have a way to reach you on a daily basis, and then you find out that, yes, my color is broccoli. And I think that's just a brilliant way to engage with consumers, tap on those emotions. Where are people shopping? We hear a lot about e-commerce and online and things like that. We want to remember that people are going back to stores, but only about 20% right now of retail is done online. It's not to say it's not growing, it's not to say it's meteoric, but you have to, when you're doing your retail reconnaissance and your review of what's happening with consumers, check everything. At the National Retail Federation, they publish every year a list of the top retailers and the top hottest retailers, you know, the ones that are growing the fastest. Love comparing those lists, looking at them, and seeing, okay, all the other stuff I've been studying about consumer emotions, what's mattering to them, how does that impact which stores they're shopping? And then you can think, okay, what's changed now? So are those still going to be the important stores in the future? And if you think that, and that could actually be your hook, you can go into those retailers and say, I have an idea. It'll help you generate more business when potentially, you know, everybody's purchased what they're going to do. I think the last speaker was talking about as people travel more, they might be spending a little less on their home. Well, you can provide some excitement and emotional connection with them so that potentially they can retain those customers. Love this research. It was done a couple years ago by Gensler. And it talks about around 50% of consumers view the shopping experience as very tactical. They go in, they need this, they want to get out. But about 50%, 51%, I think, are looking for that aspiration, that entertainment. How do we make it more social? And keeping that balance in mind also is something that I think you should be aware of as you look at your consumer journey. So one of the things we always recommend is doing store checks. What's happening in store, both the physical store and the online stores. And people say, well, you know, what I really care about store checks, I hear what's going on. But you really don't get the same pulse of retail by not doing that. You can find out what stores are, where there's excitement, what's happening with the competition. You can prep for a presentation to that account. You can look at best practices. There's a whole host of things you can do. We like to break down our levels of reconnaissance by, you know, what to look for and how to find it. So there's varying levels. I mean, basics, you walk in, you see what the assortment is and what the positioning is. On an intermediate, you start looking at competitive price points. You look at what's happening with sales and things like that. And then an advanced level, and we have worksheets that we use for this, it's like, what's happening on a SKU level? What are the features and benefits that are people responding to? How often do you need to evaluate that information? And it might be, I'm just going in, I'm buying toothpaste, I'm gonna walk down an extra aisle on a very basic level I have a methodology for my entire team to go out and we're gonna capture this and we're gonna work this information and we're going to see it through for us. So as you do that, social media will be one of the tools that you use. So love this chart. Tom Robley hooked me onto this a few years ago. But if you take a look at what's happening on the internet every minute, you can see people are everywhere. So you have to be everywhere. As you come up with your social media strategy, it helps you figure out how you're going to connect with people. And then you form that relationship, and then you turn that into social commerce. We've seen statistics that, you know, 86% of buyers are willing to pay more for great customer experience, and that'll really help set you apart from the competitors, whether you're a retailer or a manufacturer. Going back to the bed, it's 4 months later, I still don't have a bed because I can't get consistent information on social media at the retail website in the store on what's available, what's coming, what the price points are. It's kind of crazy. I have money to spend and no place to spend it. One of the things we've been seeing, it's really going to have some more significant impact, we think, is the idea of resale. Cherish published a report late last year, and they talked about this huge, you know, this huge shift in psychology, and people are talking about on social media, I bought this at a thrift store, I traded this with my friends. And we looked at the data they provided, and when 50% of Americans are buying things through resale, it's something you have to figure out. How are you going to make your product fit into that kind of an environment? Pew Research publishes this annually. It's like who's on what platform, broken down by demographics. So it's not just the gender, the age, but it's also what is the household income, who went to college, all those kind of things. So you can take a look at who your audience is and where you want to speak to them. People that are doing some of this, using social media very well, are Sur La Table. I love how they're doing online classes and in-person classes, so you can go in and you can, you know, have a Valentine's meal with your honey. Cooks of Crocus Hill is a local store by me. They partnered with the University of Minnesota and the Bee Project, and they're selling honey made from the bees in the program. And they're also giving money back to Bee Research, so you can feel good about your purchases, which again speaks to a whole different group of people. Nordic Wear, also in my neighborhood, is doing a really fun thing where they're taking, not only do they do standard, more traditional classes, but they for the area in which we're in, but they also do classes that are speaking to a very diverse culture, so you have different cooking styles and different recipe collections. Watching social media, you see what's happening in things like fridgescaping, which has a direct impact on what's happening in the marketplace. You have television shows like the Today Show talk about something like fridgescaping, and the video on the left, or on the right, excuse me, was, you know, a TikTok video that was being reported all over the place with people doing just that. It's like showcasing how beautiful my fridge can be. This is one of three or four different resources that start giving you food trends. We look at everybody from Innova to, this is from Hartman, talking about food trends. And again, you can translate those into home and housewares, because you need to know, what do people care about? Case study I want to talk about, s'mores. Everybody's heard of s'mores, been around forever. But if you did your homework and you were looking 360 in the landscape, you would see by going into stores, you've got great displays happening in September and October. Looking at social media, you see product after product after product after product after product in every category you can imagine. Then you start looking at Instagram. You've got more things happening with s'mores. Then you start looking at what's happening with s'mores bars, and that trend was coming out on social media. It's like a charcuterie board, but it's for s'mores treats. I went to something last summer, and they spent a week organizing what their s'mores charcuterie board was going to be. You look at Amazon and the accessories for making s'mores, you know, 7,000 results for s'mores accessories. Then you go into Google Analytics and you go, what parts of the country are the biggest s'mores users? What are the accessories they're looking for s'mores? So you can see how it all starts to pull together. You've got in-store, online, social media, and it starts to paint a picture of an opportunity that speaks to different audiences. So now we're gonna turn into trend and how that all fits into here. One of the things you need to do is pay attention to what's happening with your consumers as far as other product trends, whether it's color or design themes or whatever. So we pulled a few of those to show you. One of the things we like to talk about is there's money to be made, and this chart is courtesy of Michelle Lam at the Trend Curve. There's money to be made at every level of trending. You can make money when a trend is coming in. It might be higher priced and less readily available. It peaks, and then on the other end, it becomes more readily available. The masses are buying it. And then when you get into the decline, if your channel of trade is speaking more to masses, you can still make money. So think about trend at every level of the trend curve. So some of the trends that we like, based on what we're seeing in-store and social media, are modern messaging. How is language being used? You can see plays on words like trick or treat, ideals to die for, DIY for. Or you've got language that's a little saltier than we normally would have expected, where you're, the F-bomb and other things are very, very common. We also love messaging that's being used in product, and the ones on the right from Genuine Fred. I love the roach clip in the middle. Who would have thought that would be a bestseller, but it is. And then the human organs, I think that's hysterical, and that's hysterical copy. If you can't read it, it says, I gave this to my cousin. He's a paramedic on a helicopter. It freaks people out when he pulls out some barbecued ribs and starts eating. That's his lunch kit. It's funny. It speaks to a whole different audience. And then, shut up, liver, we've got you covered, coming from Twisted Wares. We're also seeing this, Typo is a great store, both inline and on, both in-store and online. And they're doing some really fun things, capturing self-care, bored, zero Fs given, also building on the whole subscription box, mystery box. We don't know what's going to come. You just know it's going to be fun and interesting. Be remiss if we didn't talk about inclusivity. You'll get cues on what's happening there by going out to stores and looking online. Same thing with safety. And safety covers a lot of different areas depending on your region. Safety can still be about, do I feel safe going out with COVID? But it can be personal safety in other ways. But it's interesting to see how those are all approached in different markets. Sustainability is another thing. And then one we're watching very closely is the idea of inspiration. Do one thing every day that scares you. Helping people be their best, again, ties to that emotional connectivity that we were talking about that's demonstrated both in stores and in product. Charity is another one. We're giving money away. Supporting causes you like. And then MeTail, how to take care of yourself, how to... it's slightly different than the book I talked about earlier, and I still want you to call me if when you read the book and tell me what you think. But this is about taking care of me. And we noticed probably 3 years ago at Selfridges that their entire Valentine's selection was a gift for you, a gift for me. It's like, how do I reward myself and make me feel good? And speaking of making me feel good, takes us into an area that is a little uncomfortable for many people, but the whole idea of sexual wellness is a huge market. Right now, when you see lots of traction and you see great marketing activations by that whole category. And then you also see really fun things happening with collaborations. This one was with Cotton On and Keith Haring, where you're celebrating the rich history of rich history of product and art and design. And then when we move into other clever packaging, certainly we want to celebrate some of the GIF finalists, love some of these innovative products like the food scraper and the different brushes and colanders, love the roasting trays. Who doesn't need the wine grasp to sit on their lawn chair as they're doing their outdoor backyarding? Loves this teapot that sits on a different angles. Saw these pictures at the show yesterday, Talisman, thought it was really a fun, the picture on the top is a really fun take on, with all the interest in grains, and you're supposed to rinse your grains, a regular colander doesn't always do the trick. So this one is both a measuring cup and a colander, and it comes in all different colors, so you could use it in your kitchen however you like. And then taking something like a roasting pan and making it in an herb design. Very, very clever. And I loved what Tabletops did with their, on the image on the right, they have the water bottle, the stainless water bottle, in two compartments. So you can have your cold beverage and your hot beverage, like your soup, all together, so it's got everything you need for lunch. I think there's just really fun things you can do to demonstrate that you're listening to people and you're aware of what their needs are. Of course, Villeray & Bach came out with the globe a couple years ago, but it's a beautiful, beautiful representation of how you can display product in a great way. Love these little handles. and steam releasers that look like puppy dogs, more things happening with water bottles. Love this light that you can use everywhere. And who hasn't had that last minute, oh my goodness, what am I going to do for dinner moment where you're doing the, what do you call it, scrape and burn, or scrape and turn and scrape and turn with your hamburger or your meat. Great way to cut it up and dice it at the same time. One of the other things we look at is, and when we're visiting stores or online, is color. And Michelle put this slide together, and I love it. She said, studies have suggested people make subconscious judgments about products within 90 seconds of their initial viewing, and up to 90% of that assessment is based on color alone. So think about that as you're putting your brochures together, as you're putting your product packaging together, as you're putting your displays together. If people on an emotional level are responding to color, and I saw some great research, I think by Psychology Today, where they have a color wheel, and it's like, these colors mean these emotions, these colors are best in these packaging. So take a look for that. Some of the colors that Michelle thinks are going to be really popular going forward are the greens. And you can see different iterations of that there. Also, creative yarn and use of yarn and macrame and craft is something that we see coming based on what's happening in consumer mindsets. And gingerbread, new twists on that. We think there's some really fun things to be looking at for that. As our host mentioned, I do a lot of licensing, so I'd be remiss if I didn't say one of the things you can follow to see what consumers are thinking is the sales of licensed products. There's nearly $300 billion worth of licensed products sold every year. The rate of sale outpaced traditional retail. And in categories that we're in today, almost $57 billion is trading hands. Those are numbers you really can't afford to ignore. Not saying all your products should be licensed, but think about how it might help you reach a different consumer, one who has a mindset for a certain group, one has a mindset for, I love a certain celebrity, I love a certain brand, and how can that extend into your areas? I've seen some great examples here at the show, as well as we saw Peanuts doing housewares products at both Williams-Sonoma and Pottery Barn. And then I love this Airstream and Pottery Barn collection where, you know, you can outfit your Airstream and you can, your whole RV with the Pottery Barn sense of design. So as we're starting to wrap up here, think about the last few feet to the last engagement you have. If you're a retailer, love what these people are doing here. The Easter Bunny brings you your Easter package from Briar Grove Pharmacy, or Santa brings you your package at Neiman Marcus. But that last interaction, whether it's on the phone, online, in the store, is critical. So don't forget that. And that matters whether you're a manufacturer or a retailer. Key takeaways, you need to be there when and how it matters to your consumer, and it always matters. I mean, they're online, they're shopping all the time, so you can't afford not to be in your A-game. And you need to know your consumers, speak to their needs as people. As Tom Morable also said, you can't just know your consumers, you have to be your consumers. Put yourself in their shoes. What are they thinking? What do they want? How can I make their lives easier? And then as we talked about the woman from Ambiente who was talking about making people happy, don't just try for satisfaction. Satisfaction brings you to mediocrity. You want to make people happy. And if you have trouble forgetting that, remember Maya Angelou said, people will forget what you said, they'll forget what you did, that they'll never forget how you made them feel. And that's what we need to strive to do in all of our presentations, all of our interactions, all of our product. We need to connect with people on an emotional level. So with that, thank you very much. And if anybody has any questions, like I said, this was a 30,000-foot view, but I wanted to let you know there's a lot out there.
And if anyone does have any questions, we have a microphone that will test your physical skills as well as your mental ones. Any questions? Okay, good. I got to ask the first question. One of the things I found was very interesting was your take on the emotional element of purchasing. Mm-hmm. I think in this day and age, people are more and more data-driven.
More and more what?
Data-driven. We have so many sources of data now. If you're a data-driven, if you've been told, you know, numbers, how do you start to think about bringing the emotional equation into what you're doing to be effective in reaching consumers?
I think, you know, from my point of view, that comes back to what I said at the end. It's like you can't just think about your consumers as consumers. You have to be them, think about them. What would my reaction be if somebody did that? I got a little bit of a taste of that in the Mickey Mouse or the Minnie Mouse and the M&M's thing, where you found they're vastly different responses to making changes. And I think if you, again, put yourself in your consumer's shoes and said, what would I think about this change? You'll find that your audience may lead you there. I think another important thing is to not just think about my data, my silo, because when you do that, you get one story from one point of view. It's so important to be looking at, you know, if this is my consumer who's buying my product, what are they doing in other categories? What are they doing for vacation? What are they doing for leisure? Who are they talking to? Where are they going? There used to be a great report, Spectra report from Nielsen that said if they're buying this brand of toothpaste, these are the magazines they read, these are the sports their kids are in, these are whatever. And then you can start to get into that emotional feel.
Well, it was so funny when you did the thing on the s'mores. Talk about monitoring trends that may not be exactly in your immediate area. S'mores wound up with s'mores explosion and s'mores accessories. I think that's valuable to try to start to think in a broader sense about what you need to be following.
Well, and I think we saw this as an industry. Some examples that, you know, we like to use are charcuterie trays and things like that were talked about a lot earlier than you started to see them broadly in the marketplace. So if we were doing a better job of listening, you know, maybe we could have had, you know, more benefit from that trend. Same thing with sheet pan dinners. I mean, we were doing sheet pan dinners at my house, and I have, you know, I love my cookie sheets, but, you know, they wobble and there's not really a good handle, and the grease is running out. So wouldn't there be, if we were paying attention to what consumers are looking for, it would be, you maybe get a bead on, this would be a great accessory and something to look at earlier. So connecting those dots, I think, is really important, and having that wide frame of reference.
That's great. Any other questions? Whoop. You ready? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
God. I'm so not an athlete. It could kill me. One of the things that I wanted to ask you was...
I can't hear you.
Sorry. I wanted to ask you, you talk about helping consumers make decisions, and I think that's, you know, when you present things in lifestyle, is there a way to help consumers make decisions when your merchandising is that part of, you know, sometimes you give consumers choices and they get like wound up. But you, at one point you had said, you know, help people make decisions about what to buy and what to do and things like that.
Oh yeah. I mean, you can create area of solutions for them. So if you're dealing with home and housewares and, you know, people that have young kids and they want to do fun things with their kids, maybe you create a little baking center. I saw a really fun one at La Bovita in Paris where it's like you want to spend an afternoon with your kids. Here's a kid-focused cookbook. Here's some menu items you might want to consider. Here's the accessories you need. So the whole solution is right there.
You'd asked a question about emotions and data and, you know, how the two work. I had the pleasure of working with Leanne on something that we're going to be reporting tomorrow at the keynote, if you can get up at 7:30. But right now the data is about emotions, and that should tell you how important emotions are. You know, I mean, it's like when we look at all the data you're seeing is how do people feel? How do you tap into how generations feel and things like that? So the data itself is pointing to how important emotions are and how you tap into them.
I was just thinking that, you know, if you want to see how important emotions are to purchasing, think of all the things you have two or three of. Because you didn't need two or three, you needed one. Anybody else? Well, thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
We're going to do a little summation. We do a little summation on homepage news. This has been recorded. It will be on the website down the road a little bit. Otherwise, you made the point of the geo winners. You know, check them out. There's a lot of displays of various things like color, and maybe you get some ideas from them. So do check those out too. Thank you very much for coming.